And you have osteoblasts, which are going to build or form new bone tissue. So those are the main things that you really need to know about bone growth, and as far as with weight-bearing exercise, that it does place stress on the bones and basically allows them to grow. So moving down to the further down on page 26 to types of bones, they're going to go into a little bit about the types of bones in the sense of long bones, short bones, irregular bones, flat bones. It would be kind of a good idea just to have an idea of what bones are which. For instance, the humerus being a long bone, the femur being a long bone. Short bones are like your wrist, carpals, flat bone being like your scapula, irregular bone being like a vertebrae. If you were to find a vertebrae or like a whale vertebrae on the beach, you would, the only thing you could really describe it as is a vertebrae. And sesamoid would just be a bone that grows that's not attached to any other bone, like the patella. So that's all from table 2.1 in the bottom left of 26. But just to have an idea, that really doesn't come up on the test, but having an idea of that could just be beneficial in the field. So they talk a little bit about the anatomic features of a long bone on the top right of page 27. And it is important to understand that you don't necessarily need to know the epiphysis or the diaphysis or the epiphyseal plate, but it is good to understand what happens within the center or the marrow of long bones, which is the formation of red blood cells or the creation of red blood cells. And also, the epiphyseal plate is where bone growth occurs from childhood to adulthood. And it's the epiphyseal plate is going to be on the end of long bones and constantly be putting new bone, building it in length until the person reaches of age, which in females is typically around 18. Males could be anywhere from 21 to 24, depending on the person. So looking down to the right on figure 2.10, you can kind of see the features of a long bone. That's specifically the femur. You have your medullary cavity containing the bone marrow where red blood cell production occurs. You have your periosteum, which is going to be the outside of the bone. You have your articular cartilage up above, which is going to cushion the joint movement to the hip. And then just the different sections, your epiphysis, diaphysis, and and our other end epiphysis. So moving on to page 28, we get into a little bit about the periosteum, medullary cavity, articular cartilage. We talked pretty much enough about that. Having an idea of what that is good, but it won't necessarily come up too often on the test or come up at all on the test. So short bones, you're looking at your carpals, flat bones, you're looking at your scapula or your shoulder blade, irregular bones, that's what I was talking about earlier with the vertebrae, bone markings. The only thing you need to understand bone markings for is that they mark bones based off of where muscles attach to the bone. For instance, if you have something like a sulcus, which is a depression in the bone, that's where it potentially a muscle might attach. Also, you have processes, which are like points in bone in which tendons and muscle and ligaments can attach to, and different things like that. So just to define them, a depression is a flattened or indented portion of a bone, which can be a site for muscle attachment. And then a process is a projection or a protrusion from the bone where muscles or tendons or ligaments can attach. So moving on to the left side of page 30, it's going to give you an example of each one: a fossa, a sulcus, a process, a condyle, an epicondyle, a tubercle. That's just kind of it. I mean, it's not really that important as far as being a personal trainer, understanding the different bone marking names, but you can understand that that's where a muscle might attach. For instance, figure 2.15, a sulcus, that's where the short head of the biceps brachii attaches. I mean, that's pretty much what we're looking at. So moving on to the right-hand side of this page, or page 31, talks about the vertebral column. Just as good for information for you to know in the field is that the vertebral column has approximately 7 bones in the cervical region, 12 bones in, or 12 vertebrae, I should say, in the thoracic region, and 5 lumbar vertebrae. So the vertebral column, to define it, is a series of irregularly shaped bones called vertebrae that houses the spinal cord. And moving on to page 32, you can kind of get a good picture of the vertebrae. So the top, you have the C1 through C7. Those are the names of the vertebrae in order from the top to the bottom. Same thing with thoracic. That's where all your ribs attach to the thoracic vertebrae, which is T1 through T12. Then you have the lumbar vertebrae, which is L1 through L5. And then the sacral, they're all fused, but you can name them S1 through S5. And then the coccyx is going to be your tailbone. I'm sure if you've ever fallen on your tailbone, you know what it feels like to bruise your tailbone. And in the top right on table 2.2, it just kind of goes over a little bit more specifically what the cervical spine, thoracic spine, lumbar spine are, and then the sacrum and the coccyx, which you can read and learn more information on. So the joints is the next section in the middle of page 33. And it is important to understand that joint motion is called arthrokinematics. They do tend to talk about arthrokinematics on the test, not necessarily as a direct question, but they want you to know that altered arthrokinematics is going to be the improper movement of a joint or improper motion of a joint. So moving down to the classifications of joints, you have synovial joints, you have non-synovial joints. The difference between the two is that, well, let me define synovial joints, joints that are held together by a joint capsule and ligaments and are most associated with movement in the body. So a synovial joint is going to have movement and have like a bursa or a fluid-filled kind of capsule that allows for smooth transitioning movement. Non-synovial joints are not going to have that characteristic, and they're pretty much immobile. Like the joint in between your two skull or your skull bones, such as the frontal lobe and the parietal lobe of the skull, they do not have any movement because they're basically stuck together. So also we can go over a little bit about joint motions, and that's basically what 34 and 35 talk about. Figure 2.22, 2.23, 2.24, 2.26, or the joints have rolling motions, sliding motions. They have a spinning motion like your radius and ulna or pronation and supination. They have a gliding joint. They have hinge joints like your elbows and knees, and they also have condyloid joints that are move like your phalanges or your fingers. And they don't actually even go into this on the test. It is kind of good to understand the way that joints move, but it's not going to be focused on the test. So, they go over non-synovial joints, which are just immobile joints, such as the ones in your skull, when you look at page 36. And that's specifically in figure 2.31. Also the different types of joints, saddle joint, pivot joint, ball and socket joint. And then table 2.3 on the right-hand side of page 37 is going to go over all of those joints individually. So gliding, condyloid, hinge, saddle, pivot, ball and socket. The major movers like the shoulders and the hips are going to be your ball and socket joints. Hinge joints are going to be your elbows and knees and just different stuff like that. So the functions of the joints are basically where movement occurs in the body. So that would be just the main function that you would need to know. And then looking at joint connective tissue, such as ligaments are the primary one. And to define a ligament, you do need to know the difference between a tendon and a ligament. So a ligament is the primary connective tissue that connects bones together and provides stability, input to the nervous system, guidance, and the limitation of improper joint motion. So kind of to break that down, ligaments attach bone to bone, and they also have nervous system signals in them that will potentially send a signal if the joint is close to hyperextension or if there's any improper movement occurring at that joint. So moving on to page 38, we're going to get more into the muscle and the muscular system. Basically just to end up the skeletal segment, exercise and its effects on bone mass. Basically, weight-bearing exercise does improve bone mass or increase bone mass. And that's what we kind of talked about earlier with osteoblasts building when they're stimulated by the bending of a bone. So in figure 2.32, you're going to get a little image of a ligament. So a tendon is going to attach a muscle to a bone. A ligament is going to attach a bone to a bone.